following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
He's an American icon who fought in World War II, gave you Martin and Lewis, Martha Ray, George Gobel, Tennessee Ernie Ford, Andy Williams, Fried Green Tomatoes, Spinal Tap, The Princess Bride, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me, The Declaration of Independence, People for the American Way, and a few TV shows.
Maybe you've heard of a couple of these.
All in the Family, Sanford and Son, Maude, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Hot L, Baltimore, One Day at a Time, Mary Harmon, Mary Harmon, The Dumplings, All's Fair, All the Glitters, Fernwood Tonight, America Tonight, Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, The Baxters, Archie Bunker's Place, Silver Spoons, Gloria, Square Pegs, A.K.A. Pablo, Who's the Boss, 227, Sunday Dinner, The Powers That Be, 704 Houser, Channel Umpteen and 3, One Day at a Time on Netflix.
All of the above with Norman Lear. It's all of the above with Norman Lear. What you do, you know that Norman Lear is just another version of you.
So I'm sitting here at this table with this is Norman Lear, I neglected to say. And the title of what we're about to do is All of the Above, which is a fair title because I don't know. Paul, is there anything we won't talk about?
There's nothing we won't talk about. And it's All of the Above with Norman Lear.
And your name again? And Paul Hipp.
Yeah, sidekick. Or as today, Jay Moore said, Tennille.
Pardon me. Today, Norman Lear has a cough, as you can hear. He'll try to hold on to it. But that door is going to open a little while, and guess who's going to walk in that door? Gretchen Carlson.
Yeah, that's what I hear. This is great.
Author of a new book, which we're going to talk about.
Be Fierce.
And a bunch of years into a very interesting life. She's on the planet doing much.
A musician as well, a concert violinist.
A concert violinist and a Miss America.
And a Miss America.
You know, my grandmother would hear that and say, go, no. She couldn't believe that a woman could be a Miss America and a concert violinist.
Well, I know about that. Tell them more about Go
and a news commentator.
News commentator. Fox and Friends.
Yes, Fox and Friends, which is 180 degrees from the politics of the man uttering these words.
Yeah.
But not always. No, not always. But we'll get into all of that.
Yeah.
All of the Above with Norman Lear.
Hey guys, it's me, Corinne. I got a new podcast on Podcast One called So Random with me, Corinne. Tune in for the good, the bad, the ugly, and even embarrassing. Peen your pants convos all the way. Unfiltered, oh yeah. Download new episodes every Thursday at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe at Apple Podcasts.
Now back to All of the Above with Norman Lear.
Wait, go, oh,
that
go
door,
no.
That door opens. That door opens in.
Well, hey.
This is a very attractive woman.
She's here.
I don't care what she says. I think she is.
Miss America.
And she's opening this door.
Gretchen.
Followed by
hello.
Wow, I just appear.
See? That's the magic.
Yes. Wow, and I come bearing coffee.
That's the thank
yes.
you. Thank you, Gretchen.
Thank you so much.
How did you know that I love a double macchiato?
Because a little birdie told me.
A birdie. Yeah. I love those birdies that talk about double macchiatos.
I know. I don't even know what a double macchiato is, to be really
honest. I don't know
what
a birdie that talks is. We're even.
Wait, what are
well,
you
thank
drinking?
Thank you for having me.
Straight up coffee?
Yeah. You know, usually I put a little whiskey in it, but it's too early in the day right now.
Yeah.
That's for later.
5 o'clock somewhere.
Whiskey
yes.
and coffee?
No, I'm kidding. No,
yeah. Actually, yes, but Jameson's a nice Irish coffee. Ooh, I used to love
true.
Those.
Is that
right?
I used to love that. Oh,
yeah.
Hearing that for
with
the first
with a little whipped
time.
Cream, though.
With a little whipped cream.
Yeah.
Oh, you must have Jameson's. Oh, yeah. I don't drink them anymore because I have an allergy. I break out in handcuffs.
Now, that has to be an old one, and I never heard
it
of
it. It is an old one. I've got to
But I never heard of alcohol in
Woo!
Coffee. I never heard of breaking out in handcuffs.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on.
I've never met Gretchen Carlson.
Till right. today.
It's taken me 95 years, some months, some days, some weeks to get to this moment.
Wow.
All of these things happening to me for the first time.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my great pleasure to be here and talk about my journey, about how I ended up being fierce in life.
Yeah.
And you understand it took you every split second of your life to get here?
It did.
Across this table with those headsets on, holding the coffee?
Yeah. No, actually, I actually really do believe that, especially when you're trying to build courage in your life to do something brave. It's not something you just decide overnight. So yeah. It is a lifetime of building the blocks for that and how you were raised and, you know, things your parents told you. In my case, parents who told me I could be anything I wanted to be every single day.
Parents told
100%. And, you know, it's what I'm trying to pass along to my courageous little girl who's also here with us today, 14.
A very pretty and courageous little girl. Yeah. And I know a lot about little girls because there are five of them in my life.
Aww.
Daughters all and one son.
Good for you.
And I like that.
Yeah. Well, I was blessed with a son, too. But, it's actually what, you know, my life lessons now, they're very applicable to my daughter, but they're also applicable to my son, maybe even more so to my son in a way, because part of what I did about raising the bar on sexual harassment and making it an international discussion is really about how we raise our boys. In the end, it's about...
Did I hear the woman say sexual harassment?
Yeah.
Yes. Indeed.
Is that now in the news?
A little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Really?
Just, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Really, it just sort of creeped up.
It broke out.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
There's been a couple of really high-profile stories about that since my story garnered a lot of headlines 15 months ago.
Yeah, we should talk about courage.
As much as 15 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
I know. And I've been incredibly busy since that time.
And you were at Fox News.
I was.
And... for no reason I can understand, I was at dinner with my family once. This man was at dinner with his family once. Happened to be out here, although he was in New York for the most part. But he got up from his table and came over to me, and it was Roger Ailes, and he hugged me. He just wished me to stand to hug me. This was about 3 years ago. We had met a time or two, but I mean only to meet and shake hands. I never spent 10 minutes with him. And he came over and hugged me. And I never got over that. It didn't surprise me all that much when your story came up and his name. And I realize as I'm saying that, why didn't it surprise me that much? It didn't surprise me that much because I was aware, as I'm sure you, Paul, have been aware, of lots of that going on.
Yeah,
all over, and not just in show business, but I came from Hartford, which was a big insurance town at the time. I do not know for sure that I'm right about what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
but I have to believe as a sensible, mature man that it was going on in the insurance business. It's been in every other business. It's been the way.
Well, it's very perceptive because after I jumped off my cliff and did what I did, I started hearing from women immediately. And you're exactly right. The sad thing is that it's so pervasive that I actually believe it's an epidemic. And it's in every profession. Mm-hmm. So it's not just Hollywood and the casting couch or TV and however you want to describe that. It was waitresses and lawyers and members of our military and teachers mm-hmm. and accountants and oil rig operators in Texas and everywhere. It just was beyond anything I could have ever expected.
What was the final straw for you?
The final straw for me was that after working incredibly hard for my own American dream, which, you know, I think we all wish for our kids and for ourselves, realizing that when that was going to be taken away from me at my last place of employment and mm-hmm. it wasn't my choice, that it was going to end for me there, that I decided to do something about it.
Yeah.
Nothing could be more interesting. Let's start from the beginning of that American dream. It was in Minnesota.
Yes.
And you were born like the rest of us, a small child, to your parents. Who were they?
My parents, who I'm still lucky to have, are Lee and Karen.
Uh-huh.
And
they're still with you.
They're still with us and with
me.
I'm so happy to be able to have my children know who they were because they were so important to who I became.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was great about growing up in my hometown of Anoka, Minnesota, was that it's the Halloween capital of the world.
coming up.
So, yes, I know. So Halloween, very, very important there. I know. Don't look at me like David Letterman did when I was Miss America and said, why is your town the Halloween capital
yes,
of the
exactly.
world?
Yes, exactly.
And I couldn't tell him.
Wait a minute. You
my,
just slipped my, and it just let slip that you were Miss America. What year was that?
89. Centuries ago. But anyway, I didn't know and my town got very mad at me. So now I know why. Apparently back in the 30s and the 40s, the eve of Halloween was sort of a raucous time for teenagers to create problems in communities all across America. So my hometown came up with family-oriented programs for the entire family to stay together so kids didn't get in trouble. And so Congress deemed Anoka, Minnesota, the Halloween capital of the world. It's also the home of Garrison Keillor.
Oh my God!
And so Lake Wobegon is actually my little hometown, on the banks of the Mississippi River, and one of the other best things about
is it really Wobegon? Is
yeah.
that the name?
Yeah, no, no, no. That's his made up name.
Yeah.
It's really Anoka.
Yeah.
But one of the other big things was that my parents were both Swedish, so it was like really cool to grow up being able to tell people you were 100% of something, you know. My grandparents used to speak Swedish when they didn't want us to know what they were talking about. And I vowed that I would learn how to speak it. And unfortunately, I still only know a very tiny bit.
I can't believe how much we have in common because I come from an Ishish family also. Mm-hmm. Instead of Swedish, it's Jewish, but it's an Ish.
Yeah.
So we both come from Ish families.
So do I, Irish.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Three of us Ishes.
But who's 100% anything anymore now that we have genetic?
Because that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're Americans.
We're Americans,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're 100%.
Right.
Exactly, 100% American.
So I grew up in this little town. Actually, I thank God every day that I grew up there because it was a wonderful place to grow up and have Midwestern sensibilities, which is what I like to call it. And there's something called Minnesota Nice, which is very true, that people really care for one another there. Minnesota is the most altruistic state. I think per capita, Minnesotans give more to charity than any other state.
Is that right?
We adopt more children than any other state. And so you grow up, you know, learning this. My grandfather was a minister, so I spent a lot of time doing volunteer work in the church and... anyway, I bring my kids back home all the time because we live on the East Coast now and it's not exactly the same. And I want them to see the wonderful benefits I had of growing up a simpler life. So that was the beginning for me. But I always had, you know, my one grandparent said when I walked into a room, here comes trouble. I had a lot of tenacity and I stuck up for myself for an early age. One of the best stories was in kindergarten. I went to the first day of school, and for some reason, the teacher divided the class into kids who could read and kids who could not. Not sure why she did that. And she put me in the...
She was stupid.
I know. It was really... I don't think they do that anymore. So she put me in the can't read group, but I actually knew how to read. So I went up to her desk three times that day, and I said, but Mrs. Grossline, I know how to read. And she said, oh, just go back and sit down in the can't read group. So I ran home from school. I slammed the back door. I can still see myself screaming to my mom and saying, but Mom, I know how to read. And so she called the school, and the next day I was in the right group. But I tell that story because it sort of sets the stage for life in general about, at a young age, standing up for yourself. And imagine if I hadn't done that. I don't really know why I did it, but imagine if I didn't.
Right.
What would my educational trajectory have been? Being told that you can't do something when you can, but more importantly, not speaking up and standing up for something that was central to who I am.
Yeah.
And fast forwards to what I did in life later.
Right.
You are a rare one in that you married an intellectual pursuit and journey mm-hmm. to a physical one also mm-hmm. as a beautiful woman. And as I say that, I think about a culture. You know, we're talking so much about men exercising their power over women mm-hmm. in their careers and in their bodies and in their using all of that. But we're a part of a culture which serves up women for their sexual being. Mm-hmm. Whether it's fashion, I thought about that today when I saw women walk into the room with like 4.5-inch high heels, and I couldn't imagine myself in those heels. And she wasn't having the easiest time. I mean, and I thought that it isn't her. It is the way the culture has mm-hmm. moved us mm-hmm. from the low cut. Not that she was wearing a low cut blouse, but it's common to see a low cut blouse that is low cut for a reason, mm-hmm. as the shoes are mm-hmm. so tall for a reason. Why an automobile is sold best with the body of a girl in a swimsuit, you know, all of that stuff that we know. Let's talk about that a minute.
Well, okay. You know, I had an interesting conversation with another movie director from Hollywood, and he's actually part of my book, Be Fierce, where, tell me what you think about this, because I'd really be interested. He said that he thought that the sexualization of women was not always like that when movies first began, where women and men were more equals, and that it was when movies started being geared towards the teenage boy with blockbusters and that sort of thing that the sexualization of women really started then. So it was almost as we matured more as a society that we actually went backwards in the way in which we looked at women. Do you agree with that or not?
Would that be the 70s
yeah,
with the
probably.
Blockbusters? Like, you know,
but I mean,
Godfather
think about
Jones
the olden days when you had, you know, when movies first started. I mean, even like Lucy and Desi. I mean, yeah, you know, there were things that were said, but you knew Lucy was the star, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke, well, they were both stars, but it was Mary Tyler Moore, really, who, I mean, in that show was the star.
Well, that's your James Cagney hitting. Who was the actress with the grapefruit in the face? And I think there was a fair bit of
that. Was, yeah. That was James Cagney and... Oh, who
this would be a good pull if you can get it.
Mm. Who took the grapefruit?
I have no idea, so this is up to you guys.
Oh. Are you typing away in there, producer?
She was blonde.
What about Ginger and Fred? You know, I mean, think about, you know, see, there was more, it was more about the olden days of, actually, women and men were in more equal footing in some of those movies. And then you start with the blockbusters of, you know, I think that's when the sexualization started. At least that's what he told me, and it really made me stop and think about it, that how interesting that as we became more mature as a culture and a nation, we actually maybe went backwards.
Well, what do you think, Norman? Because you're around. Women were dames and broads in those old movies, right?
Yes, I was around.
I know. So what do you think? That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah.
When God took a rib from Adam to make Eve. I was there. I saw it.
You said.
Oh, yeah. I said,
did you pass the rib?
I said, Big G. We used to call him Big G. I said, Big G.
He goes back.
Why are you doing that? What do we need another sex for? We got everything going. And you know something? The word sex hadn't even been...
It hadn't been invented yet.
Invented no. yet, but I used it.
And you were wearing 5-inch heels at the time.
That's true. That's true.
No, but in the old days, like the Mad Men days, right? That's what you were talking about back then. I mean, was that a thing? Did that exist? Is Mad Men an accurate portrayal of the...
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was very accurate. I thought that's one of the... That was great television.
Man. Yeah.
It was.
Matthew Weiner, I saw his name in the paper today. He's got some new show coming up. Some new... a film. Hmm. But let's get back to Gretchen. Remember, she's our guest.
Yes, absolutely.
No, no,
yes.
That's okay. So you know, yes, sexualization of women. But in a way, that's actually different, I think, from... what happens to women in the workplace, in the sense that what I'm trying to inform people about in my book is that it really doesn't matter what women wear when they're sexually harassed. Like, it's not their fault what they're wearing. So you can wear a skirt, you can have on hospital scrubs, you can have on army fatigues. I could have on sweatpants. I mean, it really doesn't matter because...
No, I understand that. Yeah. And I didn't offer up the subject of the culture and how they
take advantage.
Offer women for that reason. I still want to talk about these cultures sexualizes women. Mm-hmm. I think. They do to some extent, males too. Mm-hmm. But it is, I have to say, to some extent, because it doesn't compare with women.
Mm. And then you try to raise kids in that environment. I mean, I totally agree with you, you know, and trying to keep them away from seeing all of that and hopefully build their self-confidence from who they are on the inside. It's tough. It's tough. You know, for me, I almost think it was like an advantage that I grew up struggling with my weight, and so that I was forced to build my self-confidence from my soul. The exterior was something that wasn't an option for me at the time to build self-confidence with. And so I really...
That's so interesting. Your soul wasn't sufficient to build self-confidence.
Well, it was, though. But so much now is placed on the exterior of people. And so I relate that because I think that I really didn't care what people thought about my exterior. I had to build it from within. And being a musician at a young age really helped that, because it was a talent that I cultivated and that nobody could take away from me. And that gave me immense self-confidence.
When did you start
I started playing when I was six.
Violin, when you were six.
Yeah, which is actually old by today's standards. But I wanted to play the piano, but the piano teacher took one look at my hands and she said, oh, she'll never be any good because her hands are way too small. Uh-huh. And so she said, why don't you, you know, try some other instrument? So the violin ended up just being sort of a fluke decision. And it just clicked right away.
But you played that violin with a major orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Well, I performed for Isaac Stern when I was 10.
Isaac Stern.
Yes.
Wow.
And then I performed my first solo concert with the Minnesota Orchestra when I was 12.
Now, was that a purely joyful thing, or did you have to practice? You said earlier that before we went on the air that you practiced 5 hours a day and you kind of burned out on it a little bit.
I did eventually at age 17. But in the beginning, I mean, I loved it. I didn't have to be, you know, coerced into any of it. Sure, there were sacrifices along the way because I just didn't have enough hours in the day. I mean, I also loved being a good student, and eventually I loved being in theater. And so that's what happened finally was that to be the best at music, I was going to have to give up everything else in my life that I enjoyed. And it was a huge adult decision at 17 to decide that I didn't want to give up
everything else. That's at the same time, or about the same time, you had to enlist in a Miss America contest.
Well, no, that was so that came as a result of me quitting the violin because my parents were devastated. And I went off to Stanford to concentrate on my education, and I got a phone call from my mom when I was a junior, and she said, I found something for you to do using your violin talent. And I thought, uh-oh. And she said, I got this brochure in the mail. It's from the Miss America pageant, and it says 50% of a contestant's total points are based on talent. This is something you can do. And I was like, are you crazy? First of all, I'm short. Second of all, I'm from Minnesota, not known as a pageant state. Third of all, classical violin had never won, still never has since. And so it was really like, what are you talking about? But because, as I said to you earlier, my mom was really a central figure in my life, encouraging me every day to be the best that I could be. And she's really incredibly convincing. And so...
Well, how did you feel about putting your body on?
I know. I really, you know, well, so because I struggled with my weight my whole life, I actually had to work the hardest at that category. And so from that perspective, I didn't see anything wrong with it from the sense that I really, really, really had to work at it to even be able to compete against anyone else in that area. So it took tremendous self-discipline.
And between Minnesota and Miss America, I'm total product of my culture. So I spent 90 years with Miss America?
How many years has it been around?
Yeah.
Almost 100 now.
Almost 100. So I've spent all my life.
Right.
Miss America's a big deal.
Yeah.
It was not a big deal in my day-to-day life but when somebody says Miss America, or I think I'm going to see Miss America. Bess Meyerson, I was a good friend of Bess Meyerson's. She was the only Miss America I ever really knew. And she, like you, was very intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
She had a strong life as a scholar. But the magic of Miss America, I'm a product of my culture. Uh-huh. I'm still...
It has 100% brand identity. You know, when you when you go out on a street corner, when you say Miss America, every head would turn.
Yeah.
You know, it is one of those things. You know who came out to support me yesterday at one of my book events was Lee Merriweather, who is also Miss America.
Yes.
And she's had her, you know, share of successes in life since
I remember
then.
Watching that as a kid, and it was a big deal.
Right.
I mean, Miss America.
Mm-hmm. And so Miss America is the pageant that has the talent category, and it's also a scholarship program. So one thing I was really proud about is that I was able to pay for my whole last year of Stanford University with the money that I won.
Right.
You know, my mom and dad had four kids in college at the same time, so that meant a lot to me to be able to use that money, you know, and be able to pay for that whole final year.
And isn't the whole world, that pageant world, that these other contestants had been in their whole lives, and then you just dropped in and kind of took the brass ring, right?
Well, yeah, so I really hadn't been in pageants before, and I really don't agree about pageants for kids at all.
Right.
In fact, I never even told my own children that I was Miss America because I didn't want them to feel like they had to live up to some expectation. And my daughter, who's with me today, she came home from school one day. She probably was 8 or 9. She said, Mom, she said, someone at school told me you were some America thing. And she said, what is it? And I said, oh, I've been waiting for this day. And so she said, Mommy, can I see the crown? And I said, well, if I can find it. So people are usually horrified by that. But
you didn't really – you knew where the crown was.
Newspaper.
At some points in life, I wasn't exactly sure where
you lost
it was.
Your crown.
Like it was in my parents' basement somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So I did have it in my closet, so I went to show her. And for a brief moment, she looked at it, and then she wanted to see the gown, which I keep in a shoebox. And so she looked at that, and then she was sort of done with it. And
that was it.
And so, you know, I said, you know what? Mommy did this because Mommy was a really serious violin player, just like she's a really serious piano player.
Right.
And I said, so, you know, that's why Mommy did it, was because of the talent and the scholarship money that I won. End of story. And then we went back to doing homework. And, you know, so it's not something that I...
It's a great story for people to hear. I'm glad you talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
In no way had I ever thought that anybody who entered a Miss America contest, it just never occurred to me, entered it for any other reason than that they were beautiful. And when I hear you say that you played the violin and there was scholarship money for Miss America and a family with four kids all going to college, that was a big help, and you went in for those two reasons. That's as good an American story as I know.
Thank you.
And I love that.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad, you know, this was a place you could tell it.
So Miss America, a force for good.
The third thing that I would add to that is that that when a challenge is before me, I usually try to give it 110% no matter what it is. So that was the other driving force in it, was that, okay, if I'm going to do this, then I really want to attempt to do it well.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you seem to have had a vision from a very young age and a lot of control. I mean, to make the decision that I'm done with violin, most kids just kind of peter off with the thing. But you made the decision that I can't be the best at this, so I'm going to apply myself to something. Where does that come from, that kind of vision?
Well, it was that I enjoyed too many other things in life that I knew to become one of the best, I'd have to give up everything else, and I wasn't willing to do that.
When did you begin to think about journalism or media?
Not right away at all. So life works in mysterious ways, obviously. And so my career trajectory as a child was music, and then who the hell ever thought I'd be Miss America? And then I was going to go to law school. I took my boards to get into law school, but then after my Miss America experience, I had so much experience doing TV interviews and speeches and radio and the like that it rekindled an interest that I had had for a fleeting moment as a child. And so I knew that my LSAT scores for law school were good for 5 years. So I decided I'm going to give this TV thing a try. And if it doesn't work, I can, you know, quit and go to law school. And
what scores?
My LSAT. Those are your entry boards for law school.
Oh, that's how smart I am. I don't even know what the scores are.
Yeah. So I got...
How smart I am is to let it alone. Not even
that makes you... That does make you smart.
Oh, my gosh. So anyway, I got my first job in TV in Richmond, Virginia, and I knew nothing. I mean, nothing at all about the business. And, you know, I learned from doing it. Mm. And actually, one of the first stories I covered, the Anita Hill sexual harassment mm-hmm. hearings on Capitol Hill, it was very fortuitous.
So this was at CBS affiliate?
This was at a ABC affiliate in Virginia. I know I've lived so many places, I have to really think hard about where. And then from there, I went on to Cincinnati, and from there, I went on to Cleveland, and from there, I went on to Dallas, and then I went to New York.
How right. deep into that story, the Anita Hill, wasn't Justice so-and-so then? Justice Thomas.
Yeah, Clarence
How Thomas. Deep into that did you feel she was on her... She was right.
Oh, my gosh, 100%.
Right away.
I mean, I remember watching that, and, you know, it was right when I was, as I said, getting into the workforce, and it was the first time I actually realized that there was gender bias with regard to women in the workforce, because not that I was naive by any stretch of the imagination, but I had been involved in things in my life, competitive my entire life. Listen, when you play the violin, nobody gave a rip if you were a boy or a girl. They cared how well you played. In fact, some of the competitions were behind screens so that they didn't know who you were. Mm-hmm. And so when I got into – and same with school. You know, being a straight-A student, that's just what you did. Didn't matter if you were a girl or a boy. So when I got into the real world and realized, wow, there's bias. You know, I remember calling my mom and saying – what's going on? Like, why are women paid less for the same job? And then seeing the Anita Hill hearings. And I believed her. And I could not believe how she was treated by members of the Senate. And shortly thereafter, in the epitome of irony, I was also sexually harassed at work.
And where were you working?
I was in Virginia still. I mean, it was about a month later. And I was in a rural part of the state with a cameraman. And we got back into the car and he asked me how I had liked it when he touched my breasts with the microphone. And it
what?
Went, oh, yeah, it went from there. Worse. And honestly, I was so petrified. This is before cell phones. I actually envisioned myself rolling out of the passenger side door like I'd seen in the movies and wondering how much it would hurt.
Right. Mm.
And I got back to the station and I was shaking like a leaf, you know. Luckily, to the credit of my male boss, he approached me many times and said, what is wrong with you? I know something happened.
Oh.
And you didn't tell him.
Well, I eventually did because he was persistent. And I made him promise that, of course, that he wouldn't tell anyone else. And I mean, this is the shame that women go through when you experience something like this. And here I was, the newbie, you know, just trying to get my footing in a brand new job.
Yeah, talk about that for a minute. How much of it was you didn't speak about it, you didn't tell your boss about it because of your shame?
Right.
Or because you didn't wish to get him in trouble because for other reasons he was a nice guy?
Well, not even that. It was just that you didn't want to get him in trouble because
he had three kids.
Yeah, and you were and you were the new person, and you just, you know, I think women in general, when they face this issue, just try and shove it away and shove it down deep into who they are, hoping that it won't happen again. And, you know, the shift of shame is finally now in 2017 moving in the right direction, which is away from the women and to the harasser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if we really want to come forward now, 25 years since that experience that I had, unfortunately, that wasn't the only experience
but
that I had in my
talk
life.
About those situations that I – you wrote about mm-hmm. Or talked other places about, where on taking the job, you sign a contract mm-hmm. which in which you agree that should anything like that or anything other happen, you will adjudicate, but quietly.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a shame?
Without press.
Mm-hmm. So what's happened is these arbitration clauses have become prevalent in employee contracts. This was never the intent of arbitration. Arbitration was a way in which to unclog the courts
yes.
with too many cases, but not for discrimination and not for sexual harassment and these types of issues. But it's been a very easy way for companies to keep these issues silent. because that is the biggest thing about arbitration. It's a secret chamber. So basically, when you sign your employment contract and you just want to work and take home a paycheck, you suddenly find yourself in a dispute that you never envisioned. And now you find out that you have no Seventh Amendment right anymore. You have no right to an open jury process because of a contract that you've signed. It can be the darkest day in your life when you find that out.
Wow.
So now you know that in order to file a complaint, nobody will ever know about it, ever.
Did you sign such a contract?
Well, I did have an arbitration contract, yes. I had it.
Fox. Mm-hmm. So, and you had a payment mm-hmm. when your contract was settled.
But that's a different thing.
What
that
allows
was a
you to talk about Roger Ailes?
I can't talk about him. I can talk about the issue. So here are the ways in which we've decided to solve sexual harassment in our right. society. Settlements, which gag the women.
Right.
And forced arbitration clauses, which put you into a secret chamber and you can never tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're where we are now. Until the last 15 months or so and the latest huge revelations about other stories where women are finally finding a voice and many of them are breaking those clauses to come forward.
Mm-hmm. And you've broken the clause.
No, I've not broken the clause.
You haven't?
Nope. I've been able to, within my settlement agreement, I was, not only did I get the settlement, but I got an apology, which is incredibly
yes.
rare.
Right.
Never happens.
But you insisted upon that.
Mm-hmm. And also insisted on the ability to be able to speak out about this issue, to change laws, to make it a better environment for my children and other people's children, to do work on this issue. I mean, usually I would not have been allowed to do any of that in
but you're still not allowed to mention the name.
You can say whatever you want.
No, I can say it, but yeah. you
I can
won't.
Say the name. I just can't say, and on March 2nd, 2015, this happened. But my complaint is public. People can Google it and see all the details that they want. I mean,
right.
my lawyers came up with a brilliant strategy to make my case public, even though I would have technically been forced into the secret chamber of arbitration. They found a bit of a loophole.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you know about my case today. And if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now.
Wow. So the secret chamber, so the harasser, nothing happens to the harasser.
Usually
chamber
doesn't.
Stuff goes on and then we move on.
Right.
And
the
he
harasser.
Goes back to life as it was in the office.
Nobody ever knows about it. Isn't that a brilliant way to clean up your dirty laundry?
Wow. Now, can we not
and have the judicial system
not a part of it?
Back you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but
they're part of it.
But here's the other thing. Usually, you know, what's so important when you go to before the Supreme Court or any other court, you cite precedent of law that's happened before, right? You say, well, according to such and such versus such and such
right.
in 1954. So what arbitration has also done is there's no legal precedent on the sexual harassment issue, right? Because none of that's ever told to anyone. So we don't have any case studies to look at
wow.
for
mm-hmm.
sexual harassment. So that's why it's like, poof. We think it's not going on in our society because we're not hearing about it. But the reason we're not hearing about it is because it's going to these secret chambers. So what I'm trying to do on Capitol Hill is lobby both sides to come together on a bill to take away this secrecy.
Mm.
And I have been working with members of the Senate for the last year. This is a Democratic issue, so I already have them on my side. But I have been privately meeting—
When you say them—
Democrats, this is a Democrat issue that they want to get rid of arbitration altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans, for the most part, do not. So I've been meeting privately with Republicans to try to explain to them that sexual harassment is apolitical. When somebody decides to sexually harass you, they don't ask you what political party you're in.
They don't.
And as we've seen in the recent revelations, it can be left-wing and right-wing people.
And a couple right. of big ones at the same time, left and right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So because of that, we should all care about this issue. So that's what I've been trying to parlay into my work with Republicans is that, do you want this to happen to your wife, your daughter, your granddaughter, your niece?
Right.
The answer is, of course, no.
Right. Well, if he were sitting at this table, what would Sean Hannity be saying?
I have no idea, and I don't care.
Mm. I can't help but think about it because he is the face of Fox at the moment
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess for the network. That's why they're seeking to get. Who are they?
And at? O'Reilly will be back. Did they just re-sign him or something?
No, he was terminated last spring. But the revelations coming out was that after he had allegedly paid a major settlement, they did re-sign.
Oh, that's what. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really. Here's what I care about. I care about what I'm doing on this issue because I really believe that I'm going to be successful in getting a bipartisan bill on this. And I really believe that then it will end up on the desk of President Trump. And it will be up to him to decide whether or not he wants to sign this.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh.
I'm reminded that at this moment, there was a time when he became president that you never saw or hardly saw a photograph of him when Ivanka wasn't standing next to him. Mm-hmm. And for a couple of months now, I haven't seen Ivanka in a photograph with her father, which has to mean something. But I wondered if it means anything in the context in which you're discussing it.
Well, I would love to have Ivanka on my side on this issue, you know. She says that her main objective is women's issues while she's doing her time in the White House. So
there's an open invitation to you, Ivanka,
yes.
Or any good friend of Ivanka's.
Yeah.
Tell her about this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
now
anyway,
how old were you when you went to, your age doesn't matter. How long were you at Fox?
I was there 11 years.
You were there 11 years.
Yes.
Did you share their political leaning?
I have always been a registered independent. And I actually believe every journalist should be an independent if you're doing straight news.
Uh-huh.
It didn't seem like watching Fox and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem. And I wonder this, because you talked about how you dropped into that Miss America world and observed, right? And then were able to do it. Was there a little bit of that with Fox? I mean, was there a little bit of role playing in that? You're a Stanford graduate, Oxford. And I used to watch you just to see, you know, what was going on. And I'm not one that subscribes to MSNBC is right and this one's bad. I think they're both not doing any service to mm-hmm. the country. But it did often seem like you're brilliant. It didn't always seem that way on Fox. It seemed purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, you give us an exclusive. You were playing a role. Come on.
I can say that to a certain extent, cultish behavior exists within many corporations.
That's a good answer.
But you we were talking about earlier when we were talking about the cultish, and you could call it cultish, of female harassment exists in, you don't have to be in show business.
Every profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the sexual harassment of which this is so brave in this book, which is Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back. The subject of sexual harassment, we're talking about sort of, if there is such a thing as traditional roles, men versus women, and women sometimes men, right?
Yes.
I would imagine as well.
Yep.
If you widen that out to LGBT, you know, lesbian, gay, transgender people. Do you address any of that? Because I think the scope could be widened. Because what could be more sexual harassment than policy that creates an environment where children get beat up or adults lose their job? 29 states and people can lose their job for being gay.
Right.
I believe.
That's crazy.
Yes. Yeah,
so
would you tell how that fits in?
It does. So Be Fierce, the book, is not just about sexual harassment. I mean, I really wrote it with a bigger scope of standing up and speaking up and finding the courage to take things on no matter what injustice you're facing in life.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so right about the bullying early on in school. I mean, that's where it really starts.
Yeah.
And, you know, my own child has faced that. And I can tell you about how I was really, really worried about my kids through all of this and how they would fare with their mom doing something like this.
They were being harassed as a result of
they weren't.
Their mom?
They were being asked a lot of questions.
Uh-huh.
And because it just so happened that the first day of school last year aligned with the announcement of my resolution. And it made me incredibly anxious.
Mm-hmm.
With them going to school that day. So my daughter came home and She said, Mommy, a lot of people, teachers and students, were asking me about what happened to you over the summer. And she said, Mommy, she said, it made me so proud to be able to say that you were my mom. And a couple of weeks later, when kids were bugging her for other reasons, and they had been for a while, she came home and she said, Mommy, I finally said this to that one and this to that one. Right. She said, Mommy, I did it because I saw you do it.
But that's great for your kid. But these kids, like, that end up being like, you know, what I'm talking about is the widening of that.
Right.
That
well, so,
view.
So yeah,
like,
so what we were talking about.
We don't end up
is,
with Matthew Shepard.
No, I know. It's one. It's such a great point.
Yeah.
And so the book is not just about stopping harassment. It's about how do we teach our kids to have a voice and the tolerance within our society.
So you do mention that in
yes,
here.
Yes.
That, oh, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's much more broad than just sexual harassment. I mean, I do one chapter completely on a guide for women or men if they're being sexually harassed, which is my playbook, my 12-point plan. That's chapter 4.
Right.
So basically you could just tear it out of the book and put it in your back pocket and know exactly what to do so you have a plan.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. So, but it's much more than just about sexual harassment.
Mm.
It's about injustice
for
many minority groups.
That'll be an eye-opener for people that were fans of yours
mm-hmm.
at Fox and Fox and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important.
Thank
great.
You.
Great.
Thank you.
So I have to believe if, with a gun pointed to you or something, somebody said, you know, forget independent, on which side do you lean, Republican or Democrat? You would lean Democrat.
Yeah, well, for sure on social issues, for
yeah.
sure.
Well, what other issues are there?
I know. Well, you're right.
They all seem to be social issues to
I know.
Me. If you go to the science of the economy or whatever, it's all, it seems to me a question about how many people are out of work, how many people can't send a kid to school, how many people are suffering because the economy is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at a time when they're talking about tax cuts for the 1%. For the most part, as I read left and right, that's what the way it seems to be. As I fight to get the what are the best minds thinking, whatever party they're in, the best minds are concerned about you know about tax cuts and what it will mean for the for folk.
Mm-hmm. Well, and. One of the reasons, though, that I think it's important to see things from both sides is because two things. We become so divisive in this country. And one of the things I've learned over the last 15 months and advice that I share with other people now is that you should not only watch what you agree with.
I agree.
You should.
That's why I would watch Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. So you at least once a week, please, I implore on people, to watch something you don't agree with, because otherwise we remain completely closed-minded.
Right.
And the second thing is, as long as we're that divisive, we're never going to get anything done. And that, to me, drives me more nutty than anything else, because I do believe that we have to compromise from time to time to find solutions. That used to happen. I mean, it used to happen in the olden days. Actually, Bill Clinton was a great compromiser, you know?
Yeah,
he realized that when he was elected. And things got done as a result. What has Congress done lately? Nothing.
But
for all the months he's been there promising this, that, and the other thing, he hasn't scored with this or that or the other thing. He's
right.
got nothing done.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and that's why I'm so adamant about working on this bill, because wouldn't it be great if we got something done for women?
You know, I'm interested in your being an independent. I think of myself as a bleeding heart conservative. And the reason I think about conservative is you will not mess with my Constitution, my Bill of Rights,
mm-hmm.
the promises I, as an American— in all of my papers, my Bill of Rights, my Constitution, my Declaration of Independence. I underline the "my" because that's the way I feel about it as an American. I think that's as conservative as hell if you're willing to die for it, and I was willing to die for it. But does my heart bleed for those kids that don't have an equal opportunity under the law? Yes.
I know.
How do we make it possible? It's impossible right now as I see it to cover them all. But to get started in a way that acknowledges we have people who are American citizens who need help. Mm-hmm. Because they're never going to, if they don't have a better school, they're not going to get the education they need. If they don't have X, Y, Z, they're not, which is so clear. Mm-hmm. That's why I think that's where the bleeding heart comes in.
Well, then you'll really like to know that I've set up the Gift of Courage Fund after my story. And so I'm financially supporting organizations that empower women and girls. And as an offshoot of that, I'm announcing the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative, which is a 9-city tour for underprivileged women. It's kicking off in Dallas-Fort Worth in November. It's going to my home state of Minnesota in January and on to South Carolina. And this will be 3 days of free workshops for women.
Wow.
Who can come and learn more about sexual harassment, domestic violence, get legal help, and learn how to have a voice civically and politically.
Could you read that?
What about fighting for policy change, you know, that would go hand in hand with the work you're doing there?
Mm-hmm. Well, so we were discussing what I've been doing on Capitol Hill with regard to trying to change the arbitration laws.
Yeah.
But what I was saying about the initiative is that it was so important to me to figure out a way to start helping the single mom who was working 3 jobs to make ends meet and was also being sexually harassed.
Yeah.
And I got asked that question a lot after my story broke, and I didn't necessarily have an answer. So with this leadership
the question
was, how do you help the single mom who didn't have the resources I had to
holding down 3 jobs?
Yeah, trying to make ends meet. And by the way, she's also being sexually harassed. So that was the impetus for me creating this leadership initiative and financing it so that these women could come to these workshops throughout the country for free and feel empowered and get legal help and learn more about the issues and learn how to have a voice. Do you know that, like, the majority of people that call Congress to voice their opinion, guess who they are? Men.
Interesting.
Women in general, empowered or not, don't do that. And so not only do I want to encourage women who are not impoverished to do that, but I wanted to be able to give the tools and the skills to underserved women to know that their voice mattered as well.
Yeah, I don't think anything could be more important than that.
Thank you.
It is logical to me that most of those telephone calls for men, the way the culture is set up now, as a result of our not talking about this issue the way we are attempting to talk about it in this conversation, it requires the illumination of that you can only get by people talking about it openly, talking
so
about
true.
It, how much of it goes on. Reading about the director today.
Yeah.
And yesterday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And underneath all of that, how much more? Not because it's show business.
Right.
Because it's male-female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we haven't talked enough about who we are as men and women and who we wish to be as men and women. And there is nobody that leads us. I don't know. I don't go to enough churches or synagogues or to hear what they're talking about from the pulpits, but it seems to me these are the kinds of issues that want to be discussed mm-hmm. wherever people are talking spiritually, because mm-hmm. there's a spiritual component to everything.
Mm.
Who do we want to be as males and females in this culture?
Well, I agree with you 100%. And like I said, life works in mysterious ways. I never thought that I'd be one of the faces of this issue, but once it happened to me, I could have turned back and just gone home to my house in Connecticut and raised my kids.
Where in Connecticut?
In Greenwich, actually.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. Okay. But I decided that I was going to take on this mission and make a difference. Right. And, you know, so here I am. My husband jokes with me now. He says, you know, you had one full-time job when you were working in television, which I plan to go back to, by the way. But he goes, now you have like 5 full-time jobs. What happened? I said, well, you know, I usually look at a challenge and say, okay, how am I going to take this on and make something out of
what
it?
What business is your husband in?
My husband's in a crazier business than TV. He's a sports agent.
a sports agent.
In baseball, yes. So this is a really busy time for him right now. He's
I would think.
With the World Series. And, yeah, he was actually a really gifted baseball player, which was kind of our connection because me being a serious musician and he being a serious baseball player, when we first met, we didn't really have to ever discuss the sacrifices that we had made early on in our lives as kids, having to practice so many hours a day. So it was kind of this instant connection about discipline and making the most of our lives and our talents. And anyway, so then he went to Michigan and was baseball player of the year, in fact. And then he was drafted by the Yankees, and he played up through AAA. Then he had an injury and ended up going to the other side of the fence in representing players. So I always tell him he's lucky because I love sports. So we don't fight over the remote control at night.
What baseball team do you like?
Oh, I'm still a Minnesota Twins fan. Come on.
Of course you are.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love Minnesota. I went to rehab there. Hey, you know, having spent time with you now in this last hour, you're great.
Thanks.
13 years were you between those two dudes sitting there at Fox and Friends?
No.
Wasn't there days where you just wanted to just shoot yourself after sitting between those two guys?
I'd love to be able to tell you more.
Give us an exclusive.
No.
I'd love to be able to tell you more.
I'd love to, yeah. Oh, that's part of the thing. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll just take the silence as a...
There are a lot of videotapes online that you can go and watch and figure it all out for yourself.
I've actually seen kind of them. And now that we know you a little bit, I can see a little more like where you were. Okay. I like the one where you walked off and said, okay,
Thank you
guys do that.
Thanks for remembering that
one. Yeah, that was a good one. That was a really good
one. I don't know about that. Tell that story, won't you?
Well, you tell it. Can you? Oh,
you can tell it.
There was just all this commentary going on about kind of, you know, sexist stuff. And she went, you know what, goodbye. You know, and they had to go to headlines or something next, right? And which you were supposed to read. She said, no, you read them. You do it. Do it your way. That's enough.
That's
and
a
she
great
literally,
memory.
Literally walked off the set. Mm-hmm. And on that set, I thought that was really, because you were in the belly of the beast there, as we now know. And to have done that they didn't come down and say congratulations on a good move after that episode ended.
Okay, she's got a phone call. She's got to take about 5 minutes. We had America Divided to talk about America Divided. I did it last year. I was a host of one of the shows on New York and racial, you know, division and so forth. Tell me, I'm so glad you're going to be in part
two. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is the first time I can actually talk about it.
Tell us.
I'm thrilled that you wanted me to be a part of this project. And so we're doing an episode about sexual harassment on Capitol Hill. We already started shooting it. And actually, I had already interviewed two senators for my book about the work they've done to try and eradicate sexual harassment and abuse in the military. So a senator's...
Can you talk? I don't mean
yeah,
now.
Senators Gillibrand
but
and McCaskill.
In the piece, can you talk about where it exists?
Oh, yeah. And we're going to, you know, you're going to find out some stuff that's even more secret that takes place on Capitol Hill than in regular workplace institutions.
And we're going to get names?
We're going to get names, and we're going to get to the bottom of how we can change that process as well to help people on Capitol Hill. Because here, I'll leave you with this cliffhanger. When somebody's sexually harassing you and they are an elected official, you can't fire them. Right?
Wow. Right.
Because they're elected by the people.
Yes.
So, and when you add in the secrecy element, if you can't tell anyone about it, then they keep getting reelected.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to uncover as we continue to dig, but thank you so much for asking
me to
be a part
of it. So we may have some lifetime harassers there.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, how do we bring the two sides together? How do we bring the right and left? How do we get people together?
Well,
I know there's no quick answer.
No, there isn't. I think it's taking the bad C word out of our vocabulary. Compromise is a bad word now on Capitol Hill and amongst the American people, and I disagree with that. I think we have to have compromise to some extent to get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that I really am focusing on now is bringing them together on my mission for this bill of taking the secrecy out of arbitration.
Mm.
And if I can accomplish that, then that will
be huge.
Well,
you have a couple of converts here.
Yes, you do.
Thank you.
There's another C word for you.
Converts.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. And you have a phone call coming. Tell us, because it sounds like it's very private, so tell us all about it.
No. I just have a full schedule with promoting my book. So I think it's a radio interview, actually.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, this is Norman Lear and Paul Hipp at my side saying... All of the above, and with great thanks to Gretchen Carlson for a terrific hour and for coming to know her a bit.
Thank you.
What does it mean, this life, this day and night?
So I'm Norman Lear, and you can find me, should you wish to hunt me down, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Norman Lear.
And you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Paul Viff.
And life is good, and space and time. Give me some of yours, I'll give you some of mine.